Glitch Free Gaming.
Hey everyone, it's another episode of Glitch Free Gaming. It's episode number 146. Hooray!
Way!
He's back.
I know. What's with this? Like twice in the same space of a month?
I know. And hopefully it's going to be a full episode this time as well.
I do hope so, yeah. I do. Stupid bloody recorders.
I know. We've not had the best of luck. Yes, indeed, folks, that voice you're hearing is Paul. He is joining us tonight for this episode. Kieran may or may not join us. He's decided to be mysterious about the whole thing, so he may pop in later on.
Yeah, one part-timer joins, the other one leaves.
Cool. So that's... have we got anything to tell them? Oh, yes, the book club thing. We still haven't come up with the new game for that, so keep an eye out for that one. We'll let you know what's happening there. So E3's coming up soon, isn't it?
E3 is coming up very, very soon.
So we'll try and do our usual E3 thing.
I actually think I'm off on holiday while E3's on.
Bloody hell.
I'm just pondering that. If I'm on holiday and in the States.
Oh.
Live press coverage. Yes, please.
That'll be good. If you're listening to this podcast and you have connections, go and hook Paul up. It'd be good.
It would indeed.
Yeah. Cool. So shall we do what we do every week anyway and go through what we've been playing? So, Paul, what have you been playing this week?
This week, well, not so much this week, but since I was last on, I have been playing a metric crap load of a Tropical 5 because it was PlayStation Plus game this month.
Oh, yeah.
And I'd always wanted to play a Tropical game, and I'm pretty sure I have it on PC. I think I have Tropical 3 on Steam, but I'd never ever got around to downloading it.
Right, okay.
But I made a point of downloading Tropical 5, and I've now lost...
many, many hours.
More time than I want to speak of when I constantly say I have no free time. It's really bloody fun is what it is. I didn't know what to expect. I kind of expected like a Civilization-esque thing.
Right.
But it's actually nothing, well, yeah, no, I would say it's nothing like that. So have you played any of the Tropical games?
I have not. I think I had one of them for one of the consoles. I think I had Tropical 3, but I never got round to playing it, no.
So it's kind of City Builder meets Civilization.
Right.
So it's kind of like Sim City style City Builder meets Civilization. So you start off and you're in the colonial era and this is going down the story, like campaign mission style thing. So you're given this island by the king and you become the governor of the island and all that's on it is your little mansion. Well, let's see your mansion, your big ass palace, your plantation, a dock, a teamster's house who are your people who cart stuff from plantations or mines and stuff to the docks and back, and a construction building for all your little construction workers, and you're given 5 years as governor.
Right.
And I think, depending on what difficulty setting you have it at, so I had it on a medium, I started with $20,000. And you need to build your plantations up, and you need to, you'll get little pop-ups that's like, the king wishes all of his colonies to pay taxation on this, and you better hope you've got enough money to pay it, or the king's going to be pissed and take time off your governance. So your whole point of that is you're trying to appease the king, build up your island so with more plantations, cattle ranches, wool farms, cheese factories, So your plantations can be cocoa, tobacco, sugar, bananas, pineapples, and you'll need all of those different things to appease different things, and you set up trade routes between yourself and, at this point, it's Britain, because you're a colony of the UK. But the whole time you're trying to stash money away, or build up like a little side army militia that's going to be big enough to repel the British when you declare your independency.
Uh-huh.
So you start off, you've got like 20% of your colony's people like you. And that grows as you give them stuff. So like better housing, entertainment, so like taverns and restaurants and maybe a store for them to buy things in. And there's different factions of those people. So there's the revolutionaries and there's people that are loyal to the crown. So in that early start off, you're trying to become independent. So you're trying to appease the revolutionaries while also appeasing the king and the royalists, but keeping the revolutionaries happy. So the support for them grows and you get over 50% of the people's support. At that point, you can then declare your independence. And you can either pay $10,000 and they'll give you your independence because you're an insignificant colony.
Right.
So just pay him for his... The king just wishes you to pay him back for everything he's ever given you. Or you can decline to pay that and you better hope you've got like a decent little army and guard towers and a fort and stuff tucked away to repel the British when they come back to take their islands. But once you do that and you take your independence, it kicks into the next era, which is the World Wars. So you've then got the Axis and the Allies. And uh-huh. You get to make trade routes with both of them. And obviously your technology advances, so you can now get like upgraded infantrymen and better production and power plants and stuff like that. So goes into the World Wars, which is like mostly First World War, I would say. And then it just keeps rolling on like that. And once you pick a side, either the Axis or Allies to appease, you can go straight down the middle, but I usually choose one. You set up trade routes with them and you export goods to them like tobacco and sugarcane and keep their armies moving.
Uh-huh.
Build more money. Keep building up your island. You move on and you move on eventually till you get to the modern age, where you're setting up big trade routes and you're actually selling stuff like, so you've got modern cities, so you've got like a fashion company and a technology company and a car manufacturer, and you start exporting stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
And then you can start becoming a tourist destination and building hotels and casinos and stuff like that. And it's basically just growing your island through the ages while keeping everyone appeased, setting down the laws of the democracy, and also making sure you win all the elections, be it via people liking you or nefarious terms.
Democratically.
Yes, democratically. Nothing to do with the army we have. No.
Sorry, I'm late, guys.
Hey. But, yes, we are.
You can tell just from the 2 seconds I heard.
I am absolutely loving it. So I've played... I played up to midway of the campaign, so not quite modern era, but after World Wars. I can't remember what that era is called.
Cold War?
Cold War era, that's the one. And I've played up to there, and then I failed that mission, and I was like, okay, cool. And I can go back in and play it from a save there and try to keep going, but I keep failing it because I didn't save often enough, obviously.
No, you saved that kind of bad position.
I saved that bad position, and it kicks you all the way back to the start where you try to gain your independence in the colonial era again, and I was just like, I'll get to that when I have all of that time again. I don't. So at the moment, I'm actually just playing missions from the mission batch, or I'm just playing Sandbox, which is what I'm currently doing. I'm playing Sandbox with unlimited money.
That's sometimes a good thing to do as well. It kind of gets you used to how the game works, and although it can also be a bad thing, because then when you move into playing the campaign mode, you go, right, okay, why haven't I started with, you know, missiles or
Yeah, no, I've done
the
that.
I think it used to text free as well. We can be like, you know, when you're first playing it and you're kind of struggling for money and stuff like that. I've not specifically played Tropico, but you know those kind of games. Like, if you're kind of struggling through with the way you're meant to play it, getting the money and kind of, you know, getting through a tech tree one by one, you can sometimes be sitting like, I don't know what is next.
Yeah,
you
know, no,
next time go to upgrade to this, but I don't know what I'm going to upgrade to after that. But if you've got all the money, you just kind of blast through it all and figure it all out.
Yeah, I'm playing them with unlimited cash now just for fun, because I want to kind of like set up an island and I've got a plan of where I'm putting the tourist beach and where I'm putting the hotels and where I'm putting certain things. So I'm having fun with that, but in the main campaign, I think for most of the colonial era, I ran at a deficit. After I did start making money, I had it up to about $6,000-$7,000 in the bank, declared my independence, and then owed the crown 10. The best I've ever done is sided with the Allies, started selling them tobacco, lucrative as hell trade route, sitting with about $26,000 in the bank after that trade route was finished. That was nice. Decided to spend it all on building mansions. That was a bad idea.
Sounds about right.
That was
from the rich to the rich.
That was a bad idea. My approval ratings went down, and I have lost ever. I've never lost a game financially. I've lost everyone through being a shitty president and getting voted out every time.
Kind of sounds like democracy. The game, not just the concept.
Yeah.
The concept.
Yeah. I would actually say, like, Tropico sits somewhere between democracy and a city building game.
Yeah.
Because you need to, like, as soon as you become independent, you need to start laying down laws. So every time you advance, you get 3 laws. So do you want it to be a democratic state where only the rich vote? Do you want it to be a democratic state where everyone votes? Or do you want it to be a democratic state where only males vote? Is your first option.
Lovely.
And then you can choose whether you have it as a purely Christian state, any religion's welcome state, or all religion is outlawed.
Fair enough.
And I can't remember what the other one is. Oh, it's your military. So whether you want a professional military, a ragtag militia, or a guerrilla army, which the guerrilla army is like, no one has any training, but every citizen of the Republic fights when they need to. Which kind of makes like forts and guard towers and stuff obsolete at that point, because people just run out of their houses and batter invaders with sticks. But no, that's pretty much mostly what I've been playing. The only other thing I really played is the Rick and Morty game for iPhone. Pocket Morty.
Oh man, it's so good.
It's fantastically hilarious and fantastic. It's so freaking good.
I had no idea you watched Rick and Morty. This is great.
I do not watch Rick and Morty.
Wait, what? You should watch Rick and Morty.
I do not watch Rick and Morty. I downloaded the game because I was like, I've seen people say this is like Pokemon, and it is.
Yeah, it is so much like Pokemon. It's everything about it is just a complete rip-off of Pokemon, to the point where it's like borderline plagiarism. It's fantastic.
But I'm thoroughly enjoying it.
It's really well made. That's the thing. It's a Pokemon rip-off, but it's so well made, and it's funny on its own, but it's more funny if you've watched the show, because it's full of so many kind of references to the episode.
Oh yeah, no, I'm going to need to watch the show because I've played the game now, so...
Oh yeah, definitely.
But no, that's pretty much all I've been playing. Sadly or not sadly, depending on how you look at it.
Right, fair enough. Excellent. Kieran, what have you been up to?
Well, I have basically 3 games that I want to talk about. 2 of which I am super passionate about, 1 of which I'm also enjoying, but not super passionate about.
Right, okay.
So I'll start with that one, which people will crucify me for, because it's Uncharted 4.
Oh.
So I've been playing Uncharted 4 for the last few days. I'm not super far into it. I think I'm like a third of the way through or so.
Uh-huh.
Based on kind of the estimates people have mentioned.
Cool.
And I'm enjoying it. It is easily like the best Uncharted game. It's also probably the best looking game I've ever played. It's a really fun kind of third person shooter. It looks stunning. It plays fantastically. But also is just another Uncharted game. Like, I don't I get the love for it from people that already love the Uncharted series.
Uh-huh.
As someone who has liked the Uncharted series but never been like a super massive fanboy for them or anything. Like, I liked 2 a lot, and I enjoyed 3, but wasn't super into it, and 1 was its own thing.
Yeah.
4 is the best one, but it's a solid, great game. I think it's getting a bit overblown in a lot of ways.
Uh-huh.
But it's really good. It's Uncharted, made by the team that made 2, but more importantly, since then, the team that made The Last of Us, and it shows. Like, it's not as super dark as The Last of Us, but it's gonna be a little more grounded. Like, it's still, a silly Indiana Jones style, globe-trotting adventure thing, but the characters feel a bit more realistic. They feel a bit more like people. The game starts with Nathan Drake out of the business. He's not a master thief globe-trotting adventurer anymore. He's just settled down with Elena and he's married and he's happily, living with her. And, as with all these things, he gets dragged back in. And they do a good job. Like, the first few chapters of that game are just, like, Drake and Elena.
Uh-huh.
Kind of living a regular life, and it's really well done, and it makes you feel connected to those characters in a way that I never have before. And then you get a grappling hook and you're swinging around in the most cartoony fucking style ever, and it's nonsense again, and you've gotten down like 1,000 people.
Uh-huh.
It's a really good game, but again, it's just not an Uncharted game, so you kind of know going in whether or not you're going to like it. Like, if you've not been big on the series before now, it is still that.
Right, okay.
They've kind of perfected that, but it's, I recommend trying it at least.
Cool.
But other than that, the two games that I'm super into, one of them is a board game, which I'll explain first because it's much shorter than the insanely large second game, which is A Fake Artist Goes to New York.
I have seen so many pictures of this in the last week.
Oh my god, it's so good. Basic idea. Okay, so people who've listened to the podcast before will know that I'm quite a big fan of bluffing games. I like Avalon. I thought Werewolf's okay. I really like Letters from Whitechapel. We all mention it all the time. Like, it's the best fucking thing ever. I like those kind of games where someone is bluffing and lying to the other people. So this is that applied to drawing games, which I'm also a big fan of.
Yes.
Basically, every turn, going round the table, one person is the question master. The question master gets these cards that come with it, or you could just, this is the good thing about this game, is you don't actually need the box, but it's a nice little box, so I kind of recommend it. It comes with these little cards that are whiteboard on one side.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So you can reuse them. And so they write on they take number of cards that there are people playing other than themselves. So the whole table minus one. And write on all of them, except for one of them, a word or a phrase. Then puts a cross on the last one. They put them all down, face down. And they say a theme that connects, a theme that that word fits into.
Yep.
And everyone takes one, takes a pen, and everyone takes a turn going around the table twice to draw a line or a mark on the board, or but it comes with a little notebook and a bit of paper, but we used a big whiteboard for it. And it's not very specific about what a mark is. We played by the rules. Basically, if your pen comes off the page, then you stop.
Uh-huh.
So you can draw as much as you want as long as your pen doesn't go off the page. You want to draw an entire fucking thing, you can do that, but you probably shouldn't.
Yeah.
So you do that, you go around twice, and everyone has to draw a mark trying to draw the thing that's on the card. But the catch is, one person doesn't know what they're drawing. So they're just trying to make it look like they know what they're drawing. The other thing is, if you figure out who doesn't know what they're drawing, everyone at the end of two turns points at who they think doesn't know what they're doing. And if you're right, they get a chance to guess what you were drawing. And if they're right, they win.
Uh-huh.
So you want to be, if you know what the word is, you want to be drawing it enough that other people will know that you know what you're drawing, but vague enough that the person that doesn't know what they're drawing doesn't know what you're drawing. And it's so simple, but so evil. And you end up with these monstrous, horrific pictures that are nonsense, and you look at them, you're like, I can vaguely maybe see what that is. And it's just a lot of fun. We played two games of it on Sunday. We played three games of it on Sunday. We intended to play two games, and then we stopped after the second one, and we're like, nah, fuck it, let's do another. That was too good. let's just do it again. But we had some good ones, like, you know, we had violin, and it looks vaguely like a violin, maybe. Like, if you knew it was a violin, you'd see what it is.
Right.
We had horse, where my girlfriend thought she'd be smart and draw it upside down. And two of the other people around the table, because there was four of us. One of the other people around the table that knew what the word was, saw what she was doing, and also started drawing things upside down. I didn't, so I just drew a saddle on this horse's chin, because I was like, what the fuck are you doing? This is nonsense. And, you know, then people started putting really silly things, like someone put down Prince, and so we had to try and draw Prince.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, someone drew, like, a big quiff, and it looked like, you know, Prince's hair. Someone drew a microphone and added it on. I added a basketball hoop because of the Dave Chappelle sketch.
Yep.
And, you know, the people that were in the know kind of were like, that's kind of funny. And the people that weren't were like, what the fuck? but then the very last round, like, most of them were fine. We had things like murder, which was kind of one of the more abstract ones that worked quite well, because the theme was just crime.
Oh, right, okay.
We had, like, you know, movie characters, and someone put in Darth Vader, that kind of thing. The very last round, someone said the theme was history, which, for starters, is so vague. Like, it's, you know, literally thousands of years worth of possibilities right there.
Yes.
Yep.
And the thing he put down on all of the cards except for one was the Great Depression. And we were all sitting there trying to figure out how to draw the Great Depression. It's just bizarre. It is the most fun I've had with a party game in a long time. It's stupidly fun. I highly recommend people play it. You don't actually need the box, although I do recommend it, because you can get it for, like, you know, 12, 13 quid, and it's just a nice little kind of collection for carrying around.
Yeah, and it's also good to kind of, you know, support
the people who made it.
Yeah.
Yeah. 100%. But if you want to try it out to make sure it works with your group of friends, get, like, a pack of post-it notes. Use them instead of the whiteboard cards, and then get a whiteboard or a notebook and some pens. Like, you don't need this specific thing. It'll work with anything. Like I said, we didn't actually use the pens or the notebook that came with it. We just used a whiteboard and some whiteboard pens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which also, I think it works both ways. It kind of helps because the notebook that comes with it, because the box is so small, is very small, and that kind of constrains what you can draw even more. So playing it with and without, like, a bigger whiteboard is kind of a cool little difference in its own way.
Yeah.
But I highly recommend it. Fake Artists Go to New York is stupidly fun. It's simple and just a lot of fun.
Excellent. Good. No, I think you should do a video for the site.
Yeah, I want to. That's the only issue with us doing it on the whiteboard, though, was that I wanted to do a video on the site with the pictures.
Right.
But then all the pictures are now pictures I have taken. I don't have, like, physical things there to put in front of a camera.
Right.
Yeah. I need to edit some stuff in or something.
Yeah.
I will probably play again. I'll maybe play with a notebook again. So I've got some stuff to record.
Cool.
It should be fine. But yeah, the last game I want to talk about, although I'll also briefly say, I got a copy of Fire Emblem Conquest today.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been working through the tutorial for that, but have not played a massive amount of it yet.
Right.
But so far, that game seems fantastic. I've also heard Conquest is way harder than Birthright, so I think I've made a horrible mistake. But you know how that goes. I was reading that Kotaku had an article about which one to buy, and one of the lines in it was, I've been playing, I'm paraphrasing obviously, like I've been playing Fire Emblem games for, you know, 10 years, and despite that, Fire Emblem Conquest was soul-destroying. I'm like, oh god, oh god. but I'm enjoying it so far, at least. But the last game is Stellaris.
Oh, this is the Space 4X game?
Yes, Space 4X game by the makers of Crusader Kings and Europa Universalis and all those things that Ben loves.
Yeah.
And the rest was like... I wanted to like Crusader Kings 2 more than I did. Like, I played a lot of it. It's good. Stellaris is more of a traditional 4X game, like more of a kind of Civilization style thing than their previous games have been. But it's still got a lot of that kind of... You can tell it's made by the same people.
Yeah.
It goes a bit more into kind of the how your empire is run. So, Paul, you're probably quite like this with your liking of Tropico.
Yep.
When you first boot that game up and you start a new game, you can make... You can either start from a bunch of, like, pre-made, like, races and empires, or, and in fact, I'm booting up just now to have a look at the options, because there's a stupid amount of them, or you can make your own empire, and the options to do it are insane. Like, there's so much stuff, and it's, you can make such a vastly different playing empire. And kind of like Crusader Kings 2, it's, I feel like the places that this game kind of succeeds at are less like the base strategy game, which is good, but it's kind of light, a bit shallow in some ways, despite the fact it's this massive spanning thing, and there's a lot of depth to it, but in terms of 4X games, it's relatively light, and it's just kind of devolves to take over planets and expand. But where it succeeds is mostly the stories that it kind of builds from the context that you build up from all these different empires that are so vastly different from each other.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
So, for example, I built an empire of little deer people that are xenophiles, so they fucking love other aliens. They're like, guys, immigrate into our country or our planets, do work with us, you know, we'll treat you like equals. We love you guys, aliens. And also they are materialists, so they're kind of like, you know, Ayn Rand style, you know, kind of, you know, that kind of thing. But one of the things was there was an empire of bird people that was bordering my kind of empire of planets. And for a long time, we kind of didn't like each other, but we didn't fight or anything. And eventually, they attacked me. I was like, fuck it, I'm done with these guys. So I moved my ships out, blow up all their ships, start invading their planets, end the war controlling all of their planets, except for one. Because they were like, look, leave us, let's declare peace. We'll give you all the planets, except let's keep this one over here. And I was like, yeah, that's fine. And then this story kind of built out of that. Because there's already this little bit of a story of, you know, the struggle between me and those, you know, my race and those guys' race. But then there's just a bit afterwards where I controlled some of their planets, which were filled with populations of bird people.
Yep.
And they slowly started, you know, being part of my empire. And at the start, when you're building an empire, you get to choose some traits for yours. And I chose slow breeders because you have to choose some negative ones as well as some good ones. The more good ones you choose, the more negative ones you have to choose. So my deer people were slow breeders. So there weren't a lot of them, but there were a lot of these bird people. And so when it came time for elections and they had to elect a leader, there were a lot of bird people voting in these elections. And they voted in a bird person. who was running on the campaign pledge of give these fucking planets of bird people back to the bird people empire. And I was like, you motherfuckers. I invaded you fair and square. This is not how this works. And it's just little stories like that that kind of build up out of this. And that led into a bunch of conflicts where, like, they tried to rebel and, you know, join the Empire. They ended up getting back into the Bird Empire, and I ended up invading them again and wiping them out entirely. And it's just this fantastic 4X game. Like, at its base, it's still what you expect from a 4X game. You know, you're building cities, or in this case, you're colonizing planets. Yep. You're expanding out, pushing your empire borders out. You're fighting other guys. You're getting resources to go through a tech tree. You know, it's kind of what you expect if you played, like, Civilization or something like that. But it's just the way that all these empires kind of interact with each other, which is primarily based on just the context of what's going on. You know, there's not a whole lot of storytelling in the game. It's just, you know, as it happens. It's just really good. Sorry, that's me ranting about that.
You're convincing me to buy it, so you're doing a good job. How much are they paying you?
They're paying me not enough. So it's, but like, I'm looking at the games now, so you get, like, there's a stupid amount of options of kind of appearances. You get, like, mammalian ones, reptilian ones, avian ones, etc., etc. But the most important bit is, like, the traits. So, like, you could have, you know, a thrifty, you know, group of humans, for example, and that means that, you know, you gain energy credits more quickly yep. than other planets would, stuff like that. You can have adaptive ones, which means that you can more easily adapt to planet types that are not really the type that your race is good at. So, for example, my deer people started on continental worlds. So they're okay on, like, frozen planets. They don't really like deserts very much. They can't stand tundras entirely. Like, tundras themselves are, you know, if it's a bit icy, it's fine. If it's a fucking tundra, they're out. But, you know, you could be adaptive, and that doesn't really matter quite as much. Like I said, there's slow breeders. There's slow learners and quick learners. And there's things like strong and weak. So you could, you know, be very good at fighting. But also, it's also a good thing about how it handles the population stuff is that it doesn't matter really if your race is, for example, weak. Like, my deer people could be really fragile and not good at fighting, but that's fine. Because to start with, you can very early, you can start building robots. So I can just build robots to do all my fighting for me. Or after I've invaded some, or, you know, invaded or if I have immigration policies, I might just have a bunch of, you know, other races in my empire anyway. I can recruit those guys into my army instead. If the bird people are better fighters, I make an army of bird people instead of an army of deer people. Or if I don't like the bird people because they keep trying to leave, I put them in my army and then send them out to die. But that's, you know...
Nice!
Yeah, it's great. And there's just lots of little things you could do in that game that are... They make you feel very evil at times, but also really smart.
Right.
But you don't have to do them. Like, there's a lot of... If you want to get into gerrymandering, you can get super into gerrymandering. Like, when the Bark people wanted to secede from my empire, I could very easily say, you guys aren't part of the same sections of my empire anymore, so there's not enough of you to vote on that.
Right.
You can't join together to, you know, or you can actually, you can resettle people as well. So you could just say, you bird people that are causing issues over here, go over here because all the people on this planet are loyal to me. So they'll calm you down a bit, or at the very least they outnumber you, so I don't care what you think. You know?
Yeah.
So you can be super evil. If you like the kind of democracy style stuff, I definitely recommend this. It's that kind of thing applied to 4X. And I've put, let's look at Steam, I put 34 hours into it apparently. I think I left it running for a couple of hours, so I think closer to 30 hours.
Right.
Came out last Monday.
Wow.
It's quite a lot of time.
It is.
To be fair, I had a couple of days off, but I played a lot of Stellaris.
Fair enough.
It's really good. it's not to like jump the gun on all the, you know, end of year stuff, but it is front runner for game of the year for me just now. Like, wow. It is the best game I've played this year.
Wow.
Like bar none. But you know, Mirror's Edge is next month, so we'll see. but for now, it's stupidly fantastic. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, but that was me. I think I played some other things, but those were the main big ones.
All right, cool.
I wanted to talk about.
Fair enough. I have not played too much in terms of video games, just been kind of still bouncing between two houses and trying to get all that kind of sorted. And I also picked up Fire Emblem. I picked up Birthright instead of Conquest. It's still hard. What I did now, I've played Fire Emblem games. I played the last one, which was, I forget its name.
Oh god, I forgot as well, because I didn't own it. This is the first Fire Emblem I've played since Sacred Stones and the Game
Boy. Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah, so the last one was... my god.
Awakening?
Yes, Fire Emblem Awakening.
So I played that, and I've played some of the other ones, and I've normally not had too much issues with it, but I can't remember the settings that I play it with. So I picked up Birthright, and I've put it in, and I've started, and I thought, oh, I'll go, it gives you easy, hard, or expert.
Yeah.
And I thought, yeah, yes, same here. And I'm getting my arse kicked as well. It's normally, there's a couple of the chapters that I've done where I've done them first time, and there's been a couple where I'm not thinking about tactics, I'm just, you know, trying to outgun, and it's not working. but I haven't spent too much time, so I think in terms of actual gameplay, without counting, you know, doing the mission 2 and 3 times, I think I'm only about an hour or so into it. But I kind of like the idea of the story so far. How far have you gotten, Kieran? Can you sort of, do you know chapters or?
I'm not sure about chapters. Super early though. I just, from what I understand, both the games have the same story up until a certain point, right?
I believe so, yeah.
So I just reached the capital for the first time and basically did the first kind of training battle where there's like a healing point in the middle and you're fighting these prisoners.
Ah.
So like super early from, like right. The second time I've been in a battle.
Right, so you had people come to visit you and they've taken you from the place where you grew up to the capital.
Yes, the place where you were like, hey, I kind of always wanted to leave here. Why am I here?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think I'm probably about 3 or 4 more than that.
Okay.
So not too much. And I think I'm now at the point where the stories are starting to branch off in their opposite directions.
Mm-hmm.
It's Fire Emblem.
Yeah.
It's good. But it's still early days, so I haven't seen anything new yet. But it looks really good. I do like the way that they're doing the sort of cutscenes and the stories at the moment. So you have you always had that overlay of the artist rendition of your character, what the character looks like.
Uh-huh.
And in the background now you've got the 3D models.
Yeah.
And they're kind of moving around and talking and things like that. That's new. It looks absolutely stunning on my new 3DS.
It looks really good on the old 3DS XL.
Right, okay. I don't think it's got any performance issue, has it?
No, it seems fine.
Does it run in 3D?
Yeah.
All right, okay, so it's got...
It looks good on 3D. It could use a bit more anti-aliasing. It's kind of a bit shimmery around the edges.
Right.
Other than that, it looks good.
Yeah. But yeah, it does look really good. Yeah, so I'm looking forward to spending some more time with that. Be quite good. Are you going to pick up the opposite one? So in your case, Birthright, in my case, Conquest?
I don't know. It depends if I manage to struggle through Conquest or not. If I do, I would like to. At the very least, I'd like to play the third one, the DLC one that's...
Yes.
Like the third option.
Yeah.
That seems like something that would be quite cool. Yeah. I think you're supposed to... I'm not sure if they're doing it here, but they did it in like Japan and stuff, where if you buy one, you get like a discount on the other if you do it through the thing. So yes. I'll probably end up doing that.
Yeah. So you can pick up the... If you own a physical copy of one, you can pick up a DLC copy of the other one for $17.99, I think, is the price that I've seen.
That's not too bad.
That's not bad.
Yeah.
What's the difference? What's the major difference? Because I've not looked into either of them.
The story and the missions are completely different after a certain point.
Yeah.
I think even before that, from what I've read, the difficulty is a bit higher in Conquest. Even in the shared missions, but then after a certain point, it's just completely divergent.
Yeah.
Okay, so you do have to play both then.
You should go the full story, yeah.
Yes.
And actually, there's a third DLC campaign, like I was saying, which I think is supposed to be shorter than the other two, but it's also, again, a third completely different campaign.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
The basic thing being, there are two armies at war with each other. You choose which one you want to back, or you choose neither.
Uh-huh.
Kind of, you know. It's like the end of Grand Theft Auto 5. Spoilers.
So yeah, it's I'm interested to see how the paths are going to separate now, because I've just gotten to the story and it's getting ready to split both ways. Yeah. So it will be interesting to see how it handles that. I think I will pick up, you know, Conquest and. I forget what the third one's called, but it's the final one that's the, yeah.
I was not actually intending on picking this up. or at least not now. I was probably going to get it a bit later down the line.
Uh-huh.
I only picked it up because a friend of ours, a mutual friend who's been on the podcast before.
Yes.
Ordered both Birthright and Conquest. Because he wanted all of them.
Right.
And the special edition was out of stock for a long time.
Uh-huh.
And the special edition came back in stock, so we pre-ordered that. I forgot to cancel the other two. So I bought Conquest off of him for a little bit less than it would have cost in shops. Because he was just like, I'm going to lose a couple of quid if I try to send this back, so I'll give it for you for a couple of quid off. I was like, that's fine.
Oh. So he got a copy of Fates then?
Yes, yeah, that's the special edition.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, he's got that, but it's also not there yet. It's showing up on Friday, I believe.
Right. Okay.
He ordered a game. But yeah, so I wasn't planning on getting this, but I'm quite happy that I have because it seems pretty great so far.
Yeah. Well, I was going to get my copy from Amazon. Amazon currently have it listed at about 33, I think it is.
Was it that high?
$32.97 or something like that. Which I think was the last time that I seen it at. And I think that's the lowest that I've seen it at as well. So, I'm just, $32.49.
I believe you got these on a deal with something for cheaper.
Oh, right, okay.
So I can manage up him for a lot less than that.
Oh, right, nice.
Yeah. Also picked up a copy of Valkyrie Chronicles Remastered from him for the same reason. again, a little bit off. I've not played that yet, but right. It's Valkyrie Chronicles, so I bet it's great.
Yeah, yeah.
The art book that comes with it, which was the main reason I wanted it, because uh-huh. I have, over the years, in particular the last like two, have accumulated a rather large collection of video game art books.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, oh cool, I'd love a Valkyrie Chronicles art book. It's not an art book, despite what they advertise it. It's a little pamphlet with some artwork in it. It's disappointing, to say the least.
Excellent. Oh, brilliant. Other things that I played this week, we had a board game day. So we met up with someone that's Tam, who's been on the show before.
Yep.
And this is our Time Stories group. And we managed to play through the fourth story in Time Stories. So Time Stories comes with a story, and then there have been three individual expansions. And this is the third expansion, and it's the fourth story, but the third expansion, and it's called Under the Mask. Uh-huh. So this one is set in Egypt, ancient Egypt.
Okay.
So you're going back, and they've mixed things up again. So in each of the games, I think we've spoke about this before, and I tried to explain it on the podcast, where each of the games has there'll be some sort of puzzle, and the game is kind of built around this puzzle, and there may be certain things that you're doing. And again, it's completely fresh. This game plays, the main mechanic is the same, where, you know, you go into an area and all the cards are, you know, the panorama is laid out before you, and all of the characters decide where they're going to go and what they're going to have a look at. And then you have a look, you read the information that's there, don't let anyone else see it, and then you summarize what, you know, you pre-see what's on that card to everyone else. Oh, I went and spoke to the guy over there. There's no information we need. He was just complaining that he has to, you know, he has to do his work every day and he doesn't get fair pay. He was just having a moan. Now, the trick about that as well is that, Kieran, if you picked up that card, you may have picked up something different. Uh-huh. You know, there is always that danger as well. And that's where the time runs come into it as well. Because sometimes what you want to do is you always want to try and be as efficient as possible. There may be five areas available to explore. There's only four of you. So sometimes what you will do is you'll spread out and each person takes one, or if something looks, it sort of trains you into a way of where you can look at the areas that you need to go into now and say, oh, that looks a little bit dangerous, or that looks like it's going to be complicated. Let's two of us go there and we'll split up the other ways. Which is still good. And I think that Under the Mask has been my favorite expansion so far.
Oh, really? I know you loved the rest of them.
Oh, yeah. I loved the Marty case because of the subject matter and the way that it did it. Prophecy of Dragons, where it goes back into high fantasy, was fantastic as well. The setting of Under the Mask, or ancient Egypt, yeah, I'm not too bad, but it manages, it throws a little bit of Tomb Raider in there.
Okay.
I think that's all I'm prepared to say. I don't want to say any more. But it has some really, really neat things in it. There have been in previous games where, they kind of take you, they have you doing things that you wouldn't normally do during a board game. An example of what I'm trying to mean is, Kieran, when you're playing one of your bluffing games like Avalon or Werewolf and that, where it comes to the time where people close their eyes and then the werewolves have to raise their arms or they have to do stuff, normally what you'll get the other people to do is tap on the table or make a noise so they can't hear any movements. Okay. CS Files recommends that when you're picking up the excuse me, when the murderer is showing, you know, the weapon and the evidence and things like that, it recommends everyone else taps their leg and you're making this little tapping noise so that you can't hear movements of the person next to you if they happen to be the murderer. Time Stories takes elements like that, and it builds them into the game. And I'm trying to see if, for example, there may be something happens to one of the characters if they go somewhere that renders them mute. And then all of a sudden that person can't talk. So, and if you really get into it and you're not role playing as such, but everyone's getting into it and they're doing everything that the game is setting up to do. So the character may be mute and there may be one of the rules of the game or the scenario that you're playing that the only way your character who is a mage can cast a spell is he has to announce the spell. So now your character's mute. He can't, he's now effectively useless.
Yeah.
But you can't tell everyone, oh, hey, I can't talk. So now how do you communicate what you're doing and what you're seeing? And it changes the whole thing of the game and everything gets a bit frantic.
Uh-huh.
And it's got things kind of like that in, Under the Mask. And really, really clever things. But I can't really say much more about it.
Yeah, as I said, kind of about all of the Time Story stuff is you can't talk too much about it because the story is the thing.
Yeah, that's once you tell somebody the story, that's it. You've ruined their experience.
Yeah.
But it is definitely, I think it's the best one. And I think we were kind of all in agreement that that was, it was our best one yet. We did notice on some of the cards there was kind of translation issues, so there was language mistakes. But all right. It wasn't anything that broke the game. It was, the word was has and it should have been have.
Yeah,
minor things. Yeah, grammar mistakes more than anything else, because you need to remember that these games originally come out in French.
Yeah.
Yep.
So they're made by Space Cowboys, who are French, and yeah. So during translation, stuff will go a little bit awry, and I think that's more to do with the time scales that they're trying to keep these stories and the expansions. They're trying to pump them out at a regular rate. Still going for £20 a shot. Definitely worth it. We played through the Under the Mask. Again, we did it in a day. I think we played all in about 5.5 hours or so.
Yep.
£20 into 5 hours, that's £4 an hour, and there's four people playing, so £1 an hour per person.
Like one match of Star Wars.
Yeah. So, yeah, definitely recommend that if you're still playing Time Stories and you're wondering whether Under the Mask is worth it. And a little spoiler is not a spoiler about the game, so you don't need to switch this off. But there is a card in there, and it gives you a little glimpse of there is at least another 3 expansions coming.
Really?
Yeah. Okay.
I can imagine they're just going to keep pumping out expansions until they do a full blown sequel.
Yeah. I think the way that the stories are played out and the adventures are happening, we tend to think that there's more to it than meets the eye. Because little by little, they drop little hints of information about, the time agency that you work for, and there's little nuggets of information that come things out. And we think there's an end game, there's an end story somewhere.
That makes sense.
And you're not getting too much information even at this point. So I imagine there is going to be a good few expansions. Really good. We played other couple of board games as well. We played more CS Files.
Still enjoying that?
Yeah, that is still good. I think you need to pick that up. that is definitely is up your alley. It's one of your games.
Yeah, really. I did enjoy what we played. I think we just had an unlucky camera.
Yes, well, so we've played two good sessions now. So the first time we played it, I think we played about six or seven games. And this weekend we played four or five games as well. So everyone, we'd worked it out that everyone got a chance to be the forensic scientist. So that's the person drawing out the cards. And this time it was, the way the cards were coming out, it was quite easy. Mm-hmm. The time before, Jesus, it was, it was a bit of a mix. It was, some of them were like the game that we played, Game of the Year. And then some of them were like super easy as well. But it's still a hell of a lot of fun either way what happens. Especially if you're the murderer and you're trying to figure out how to play this. Sometimes the best thing to do is just say nothing. But it is still a lot of fun. We've been playing it with four players. Like to get it with a higher player count as well, so you can bring in the witnesses and the accomplices. And I do think it is a game that does scale well. The game says it can play up to 12. I'd actually like to try it with 12 to see if it works.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. I do feel like sometimes you get these games that are just like, the player numbers that are on the, in the rules or on the box are kind of either inflated or deflated.
Yes.
Kind of appeal to those things. Like a lot of games don't have very good two player modes, even if they say they do.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. Or vice versa, they might not support 12 players as well as they think they do.
Yes, So, looking forward to trying getting a good game of that, which is always good. We played some more of Cat Tower.
Yeah, I saw pictures of that.
It's still weird when you're playing a game where you're bending the cards.
Yeah.
Still very, very strange, and I'm still trying to get used to it. We played that game with four players. Games we played before as just being myself and my fiance, and it's fun. When you start playing with four players, you can start being mean. You stack the cards, purposely so that the next person that even looks at the stack, it's going to, topple over, and there is more interaction. Again, this is a game that scales up better rather than it does down. A two-player game is fun, but a four-player game was quite a lot. I think it plays up to six players as well.
Okay.
Playing with four players was a lot of fun. It added the time onto it. So it felt like we've been playing for a long time, but it was only 15 minutes. But it wasn't, not a bad, felt like you've been playing for ages.
Yeah.
Still recommend that one. That's still quite good. Did we play anything else? No, I don't think so. But, so that was it. That's everything I played this week.
Decent amount of stuff.
Yeah.
Mostly board games.
Mostly board games. I have, I tell a lie. I did play one more thing. And that was This War of Mine.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so I checked that out.
Is that some preparation for board game?
Yes, it is.
Still the connection.
Yes. So This War of Mine, has anyone played that?
I've not
seen much about it.
Yeah, so the game is it's a resource management game.
Yeah.
It's a side scroller, and it's the idea of the game is it's about the Serbian War or the war in Serbia, and you are playing not as one of the soldiers, but you are controlling a group of survivors that are living in a derelict house. And the idea is that during the day, it is too dangerous to go out because the soldiers in the streets and they're fighting the war. So during the day, you are trying, you're exploring the house that you're living in. So there's rubble that you're trying to dig in. You're trying to see if there's anything useful in there, if there's any wood that you can salvage or technology, or is there any food in any of the rooms that you can't get into?
Uh-huh.
So you're spending your time trying to, you know, make your house a better place and things like that. Then at night time, what you're doing is you're sending somebody out and they're going into neighboring houses or into the street and they're foraging, they're scavenging, trying to see what they can find. And man, this game is harsh. It's, I'm sure most people have read, you know, things about it now and what people think about the game. And it is quite harsh. It's, you spend your whole time building this little sort of nest that you have and this network of people, and you have them all rested and looked after, and you think you're doing well. You have a stockpile of things, and then all of a sudden the game just comes and it takes the legs from under you. So I had built up, I had three people in my little group, still earlier on in the game, and I survived 3 days, which is nothing, but you think you're doing well and I've got a little stockpile and things. I come back to find that during the night, what I did was I used one guy to go and scavenge. The other guys had worked like dogs during the day, so I thought I'll let them sleep. Let them sleep. Somebody broke in and they stole a lot of the food. They stole what little medical supplies we had, and various other things that they took. But not only that, but they then decided to attack the one person that was sleeping, and the other person woke up and heard this beating going on, and he got attacked as well. Yeah, and it is. It's like, wow, this is not. It's not light. It, you know, it's not like lighthearted or anything like that. but when I was playing the game, what I did feel is that this would be a better board game. which I don't think it's. I don't think we've spoken about the Kickstarter as well.
No, I think we've mentioned before that there was a game coming. I didn't realize it was going to be on Kickstarter because I thought it had already been funded. Because this game has been talked about for a while now.
Yes, it has, yeah.
I didn't realize that it was getting crowdfunded.
Yeah.
But the Kickstarter is up now.
Yeah. So I seen the Kickstarter and it looked really cool. Had a look at one of the playthroughs that they've had done for it, and the game looks really, really good. So I backed it and then thought, bugger, I haven't actually played the video game. So went back and playing the video game, and the game takes care of certain things for you. So you'll find that your characters say, I'm not feeling well, I need medicine. So you go out and you'll find medicine, and that's fine. Normally you would then have to, you know, apply that medicine to make sure that the right people got the medicine.
Yeah.
The video game doesn't do that. It takes care of that for you.
Yeah, you just have to have medicine, then they'll figure it out themselves.
Yes, yeah. So it is more about you going out and finding the stuff and dealing with the hardships of, you know, making sure you have this stockpile of things like that. When it comes to, you know, dishing out the food and making sure that somebody eats the food or takes the medicine or uses the herbs to make a poultice or whatever the case is, the game takes care of that.
Yeah.
The board game, on the other hand, the board game can't take care of that.
It's a board game. So.
Yeah. So you have to. So it's a bit more involved. But it has steps, step by step, on how to do it and how to take care of it. So the board game does feel like it's a little bit more involved than the video game.
Yeah, I can imagine.
But saying that, the video game is absolutely amazing. You should pick it up if you can.
Yeah, I've heard good things about it.
Yeah. It is quite harrowing. So, yeah, that was it.
Sounds good.
It does. I might actually pick up the video game and then try and play the board game when you get it.
Yes, yeah. The board game is on Kickstarter, like Kim said, right now, and I think it ends sort of the end of May, around about the 31st of May, and the game itself will be shipped, if I remember correctly, it will be shipped in February next year.
That sounds right.
Yep. And if you're interested as well, this War of Mine can actually be picked up, and it's on sale in the Humble Store at the moment for £5.09.
Nice.
And it comes with an exclusive soundtrack as well.
That's pretty cool.
Good cool. price.
Yep, absolutely. Cool. Have we got any news?
I wasn't here to plan for news.
You weren't here for to plan for news.
I don't know if you guys did.
No.
No, we did not, actually.
Then I only have the most important news of the entire year here, then.
Right.
It's always here. I always have it open in a tab just in case it comes up in conversation, you know? And that is sequel to Game of the Year 2015 got announced. Game of the Year 2015 being, of course, Dragon Ball Xenoverse.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Yes.
Yep. I fucking love Dragon Ball Xenoverse. Dimps and Namco Bandai have announced that they're making a sequel to Dragon Ball Xenoverse, which is a surprise to no one because that game sold, that game outsold like everything else that Namco Bandai released last year.
Yep.
Despite the fact that it came out with like, you know, one of the better Naruto games and one of the better One Piece games and all the other anime stuff, and it was like, no, Dragon Ball Xenoverse is where it's at. They haven't shown much of the sequel yet. There's like a trailer that shows some clips from, you know, Dragon Ball history, but I'm gonna buy it because I like those games. This one's also not coming to the last gen consoles like the last one did. It's only coming to PS4, Xbox One, PC.
So it'll probably look a heck of a lot more pretty.
Judging from the trailer, no, but you would hope so. but yeah, that's the only news I've got. I don't know if you guys. Sure, there was other stuff.
I didn't really hear much. To be fair, I have been quite busy. I've not been sort of into the news and things like that. I've been busy with sort of real life things. I have got a couple of news and kind of new releases and things. So sure. By the time you are listening to this, Fire Emblem Fates would have already been out, as well as Homefront: The Revolution.
Yeah, I am fingers crossed, praying like hell to get it on rental this weekend.
Really?
I flipping well loved the first Homefront game.
Right,
it
okay.
It's my favorite game of that year.
Yeah, but
there's
been no review copies.
That's not true.
I thought I read somewhere that there was.
No, there's been reviews.
You made me think of Doom. There's been a lot of review copies and a lot of reviews that are unanimously saying it's garbage. But, you know.
Yeah, but the first one also didn't get really well reviewed, and I loved the shit out of it. So.
I think this one is mainly not getting well reviewed for technical reasons.
Right.
Fair enough.
And also some thematic reasons.
Uh huh.
Like, the Eurogamer review is quite good for that. It's worth taking a read at. It points out some stuff where it's like, yeah, morally and ethically, it's kind of fucked up what this game is suggesting you do. And not just in terms of, oh, it's war, you do bad things. It's like, no, what? Why would you ever, no, why would you encourage this?
Yeah.
But yeah. It seems not great, but, you know. Jim Sterling, I believe, gave it a 1 out of 10 because the PC version is apparently unplayably broken.
Wow.
Yeah. So, other crazy news, something I just remembered, and I'll bring it up on screen right now. Assassin's Creed the movie trailer got released this week.
Oh yeah, I watched that.
Yeah, I watched that.
That looked alright.
It looked, the movie looks not bad. Apparently it's to be split, 70% is to be set in modern time, 30% in the past.
That seems like a bad idea.
It seems like a terrible idea, but we'll see how it goes. But here we go, boys. Here's the real news. Who cares about the trailer? You can pre-order tickets and there's pre-order bonuses.
I did see this. Fucking Ubisoft.
There is pre-order bonuses and expansion packages you can pre-order for the movie.
Yay. Buy the season pass for the movie.
Yeah.
So, this comes like, you can... $35. So this is available in the US now. I don't know whether this is available in the UK or Europe. But it goes from like $30 where you get an Assassin's Creed movie t-shirt, your ticket, and like an art book.
That's pretty good. I do need more art books.
Like the movie art book, not a game art book, but hey ho.
Nice. I can live with that.
Or you can go all the way up to $1,200 and you get a 1-1 scale replica Spanish crossbow.
Of Michael Fassbender. Oh, sorry.
Spanish crossbow that they used in the movie.
I want a 2-scale 1-to-1 replica of Michael Fassbender.
Your $500 limited edition tier is you get a statue of Michael Fassbender's character standing on top of one of the domes about to leap off.
Wait, what? Of Michael Fassbender's character?
Yep.
The one that's set in the present day.
No, no, of his character in the past.
The Fassbender's in the present day. It's a different person in the past.
Well, whatever, anyway. it's the assassiny character. Anyway.
Okay.
No, Fassbender's in the past as well.
Yeah, Fassbender's in the past.
Is he? He wasn't in the trailer.
He was.
And that's why it's a 70-30 split, because he's the future dude.
Yeah.
He's tied into the GLaDOS arm.
So you're... Your what is it? Spanish crossbow from Ubisoft Workshops, Colonel Exclusive Edition. That's the one with the crossbow. And then you've got the Triforce Aguilar Premier Scale Statue Edition, which is $500, and they're limited to 500 of those. And then the next one down doesn't actually. Oh no, it's $100, and you get a hoodie that looks a bit like one of the assassins' jackets. At $60, you get a McFarlane toy, Hidden Blade.
Yay.
And then your lowest two tiers, you've got $25, you get the t-shirt and your ticket. And at the $15 tier, you get an Assassin's Creed LED collector's watch.
Why are you telling us this shit?
I'm just telling you what all the tiers are for the pre-orders.
I'm going to pre-order all these. Every tier.
It's mental, isn't it?
And you also get some temporary tattoos at the $15 tier.
Fuck.
Temporary tattoos? Is this the fucking 90s? What the fuck?
As well as...
Temporary fucking tattoo. What the...
Yep. That's...
Remember temporary tattoos? Remember that was a thing?
Remember candy cigarettes and you got them just to get the temporary tattoos?
Yeah, actually. Cut that.
But anyway, no, that was my, this shit happened this week.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Not even news, just this shit happened this week. I'm tagging a new section.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. Just looking, Overwatch comes out on the 24th.
I want that.
I really do.
Afford it, but I want that.
Didn't particularly want Battleborn, kind of want Overwatch.
Cool.
Yeah, based on the... I played some of the beta for Overwatch, which I didn't get to talk about last week, because we didn't record stuff.
Uh-huh.
But that is really good. It's cool. Team Fortress 2-ish.
Excellent, very good.
I can never do that.
What else coming out? Total War Warhammer. Kieran, you up for that?
Yeah, I want it.
Oh yeah, I want the hell out of that.
Cool. What else we got? Dungeons 2 and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutants in Manhattan.
That's Platinum Games.
Yes, it is. It's a Platinum Games game.
What? The
Turtles.
Right.
It's same style as Transformers.
Ah.
Yeah, which I really like that Transformers game. So
yeah, so did I. So.
It was surprisingly great.
Cool.
So I'm hoping TMNT is also good, but we shall see.
Excellent. And then the last couple of things, I'm just checking my dates to make sure I'm okay. Tropical 5 is getting a penultimate edition for Xbox One, which is a bit strange.
It'll be with all DLC.
Yeah.
Why? No, I've just got it for free.
Yeah,
exactly.
Buy all DLC separately.
Yeah. So, that's all the news I've got kind of in the new release.
Yep.
Stuffs, anyway. Cool.
Yep.
Excellent. So, is there anything else? Have we forgotten anything else?
No, not really. I'm kind of flicking through the news now. such things as EA's lost one of their technical directors that's been around from the 80s.
That sucks.
He's decided to leave the company.
I think he died.
No.
That's not so bad then.
He's decided to leave the company. He was one of the guys that created the first Madden game. Not that any of us three care about that.
Alright, well, fair enough.
That new Doom game is apparently quite good.
I believe so.
I only bring it up because, like, everyone that made the original Doom games left it, like, years ago.
Uh-huh.
So it's kind of insane. But apparently that new Doom game is really good.
Apparently that new Doom game is damn good from what I've seen, so I kind of want to play it.
Yeah, I really want to play it.
Cool. Excellent. If you think we've forgotten anything this week or you want to send us an email, you can do so. You can send us an email to podcast@glitchfreegaming.com. You can find us on Facebook at just search for Glitch Free Gaming, or if you want to send us a tweet on Twitter, you can send us a tweet at Glitch Free Game. And don't do anything with Instagram because we don't do it anymore.
We don't.
I mean, we still have it. We should probably start using it at some point, but
I keep getting emails saying that if we don't click on something and register something, we're gonna lose the name or something.
Ah, okay. Oh. I'll just click that button and make sure we keep the name.
Good name.
Yeah, I don't know. It's all right.
Me to keep up with the times. Google just recently. Start of this week released Google Spaces, so we need to make a Glitch Free Gaming space that people can share links to.
Oh yeah,
okay,
obviously.
Yeah. Something else that I'll fail to keep up with.
but more seriously, I'd like to also just plug the videos up on our YouTube page.
Yes,
yeah, so you guys are starting to use that now.
Yeah, I want to try and do. I would say semi-regularly, but realistically, I don't know. I'll do them when I can. But, yeah, we're doing a bit more board game videos.
Yes, yeah, so I would like to try and get some more content done and put up there. People seem to be liking it and watching it, which is always a good thing.
Yeah, definitely. I put up a review of... a kind of playthrough and kind of explanation of Portal, the uncooperative cake acquisition game.
Yes.
And also I made a video companion piece to the Kickstarter wrap-up that I wrote on the site like a month or two ago. I will do something with a fake artist from Ghost of New York.
And soon. I shall maybe try and do something... Probably not tabletop wise, maybe video game wise.
If I hated myself, I would do something with Star Wars, but that's massive.
Yeah, I was thinking about that as well, but that is a huge, huge thing.
Yeah, it's something we like so much, it'd be good to cover, but it's so big. Letters from Whitechapel, we should probably do something with because that game. I talk about it at least so much.
Yeah, I was thinking about doing something with Time Stories as well, just to maybe give people an idea of how it works, but I would need to be very, very careful with that, so...
Yeah, it seems like so easy to spoiler.
Yeah.
Seems like you'd need to spoiler alert every, like, 5 minutes.
I think you could show... You could kind of do a video just showing the mechanics of how things work. Because there's something that happens at the beginning of every single game. So you could kind of lay it out on the table and people could have a look at that and they would be none the wiser.
Yep.
Anything after that, you'd probably start to, you know, get into spoiler territory. So we would need to be careful with that one.
Yep.
Cool. Yeah. So, anything else? Anything else we need to plug or?
No.
I think
that's it. Cool. Excellent. Well, once again, thank you very much for downloading our drivel and listening to it again. And yeah, that's it.
I might be able to be on in a couple of weeks' time again.
I might show up late again in a couple of weeks. I don't know. I've got anything planned, but I might.
I might not just show up at all.
Oh, don't do that. Last time I failed to organise it, and it just all fell apart.
Oh. Oh, well. So until next week, we shall see you all later. So see you then.
Goodbye. Yeah.